Okay. First, thanks for the for giving me the chance or give me this task to give the first talk here. And I also when I heard the Bridget wanted me to give this first talk, I was actually quite a bit nervous because I don't know whether I can do a good job or not. Then he gave me a long list of questions. Then I thought, wow, that made my job much easier. I just followed this one. Then I also realized that when I start to prepare my talk, then I realized that that's actually not true because it's so difficult to actually answer all these questions. Many of them I have no answer myself, I have no clue. And I could. Then I decided probably just to go through the things that I think would be fun or interesting to talk about it, and also my own experience, and then to try to, not on this order, but try to address as many questions as we can. And also to discuss about if there's any solution or if there's any possible solutions. And I will first start by mentioning about a few things that which personally to me I found was very very important, you know, for what happened in this same workshop 2 years ago. And then 2 years ago was the first time I came to this workshop, and I found it was extremely important, extremely exciting. And then particularly, there's a number of things happened there, I think actually quite influenced our own research in a quite a positive way. So there are many things happened in the last workshop. For example, there was a lot of discussion about new approaches and the optimization, particularly on the single particle cryo-EM part, that are from sample preparation, how the image acquisition and the processing and the validation, all these sort of things. But particularly, I want to highlight on three different things that which I think was a particularly for me, feel like extremely important and made a clear impact for the research since then and in the last 2 years. One was that in that meeting, was that Nico gave a talk about the direct detection camera and then the use of it for single particle EM, which was quite important. I was going to mention it later. The other thing is also that it was that we also start talking about the significance of motion correction in achieving high resolution. And of course, Nico gave a talk mentioned about this one. And we also talked about the first time in our approach of doing the motion correction. Then the other thing I thought was very, very important was was the 3D classification. Also, this was not a 3D classification, particularly using maximum likelihood-based 3D classification was for a while, but this was the time that really when Shaws gave a talk, and then it was the time to release he released the Relion. And I think it made it very practically very easy to use all this sophisticated method. So those are the things that I think sort of was very, very important for things happened in the last workshop. And so one thing is that Nico was the first one that demonstrated not only direct detection camera has generated by then already tremendous excitement, but Nico was the first one and demonstrated that not only it can get into us to a better resolution, but it also shows that using this movie recording method that one can use it to correct for the motion that generally during the image recording. Now, this was the one that I took out of this slide actually from his talk in the 2 years ago, that he showed that using this directly averaging the frames from the movie, that you see this kind of streaks, this cost clearly caused by the motion during the image recording. And then after aligning all these acoustic particle, individual frames to the reconstruction, that it can assign each frame that a unique position and angle that after that you can correct for the motion. And that this not only, the camera not only improved the resolution, but also giving us a much better way to deal the image, deal with the scenes which was not possible before. And then this was listening to these two papers, important papers from Nico and then also from Bridget Group, that I mentioned about this one. And then, of course, this was on the icosagittal virus. It demonstrated the principle of using this motion correction one can correct for the particle, for the motion, improve the resolution. However, this approach back then was still not possible to apply for a small particle, which has a significant, the signal-noise ratio is much lower, and then the particle size is much smaller. So also in the last meeting, that we also presented another also sort of more general approach to deal with the type of problem, but follow Nico's the way that Nico started. And then basically it was since we're dealing with most of our things that are much smaller than the acoustic virus, like in our case that back then that we're using the 20th proteasome as a test specimen. And then for that, it's not possible to align the frames of each individual particle. So therefore, we have to come up with some other ways to do it. So the way we deal with it is the whole frame alignment. So Shimin Li was the poster in the lab at that time that came up with this very robust algorithm to correct for motion. For example, this is the perfect image. We call it a perfect image because without doing anything, you can see the Fourier transform. The tone ring already goes 1 to 3 angstrom. And then, but this type of image was very rare. And in our hands, we get less than 5% of images showing this type of quality. And then most of the image, typical images like this one, the Fourier transform show a clear cutoff. And this is caused by the motion. And then Shimin developed this very robust algorithm that we can align all this motion, these frames. Then after alignment, we can trace the motion of each frame movement. And then after correction, then the tone ring is restored to this near atomic resolution, to close to 3 angstrom. Even for image like this, with a very little motion, that a global motion correction still can improve the tone ring a little bit. So this was also for us was very significant because without doing the motion correction, we're typically getting about less than 5% of the image at this quality. And after motion correction, that using this whole frame motion correction, that for almost every single micrograph we took, and that we can get this kind of quality. And so that was very, very exciting. And then also based on this thing, we demonstrate that the single particle, not only for acoustic virus, but for much smaller particle, that we can get in by using single particle cryo-EM approach, we can get in a resolution that is comparable for the crystallography. And so this is the 20th proteasome EM density map we presented back then. And then this is the 2FO minus FC map from the crystal structure. And then this was at 3.4 angstrom, and this was 3.3 angstrom resolution. They are really comparable. And so that's it's kind of like, also the crystal structure is known, but this gave us a kind of like a validation that the methods all done so by single particle EM that we is sufficient level to that we can trace the atomic we can build an atomic model if we get this level of map. Now this was for the high resolution, and then also for the sample which is very well behaved because 20th proteasome is really like a rock that you almost like there's no conformation or heterogeneity there, and so it's relatively easy, and it's actually a better sample for a test specimen compared with a grow yield, and I think it's more stable. So that's why it was a feasible quite to get this kind of resolution. But then for many things which are not so stable and heterogeneous, then that was another thing that Schultz gave it. This also is slides taken out from his talk in 2 years ago that he first mentioned about this classification for a using the 3D classification, maximum likelihood-based algorithm to classify the particle into different conformation. And that was also the time that he released the RELION, the program. I still remember that back then when he was giving the talk, and towards the end of his talk, before he finished it, I already sent an email to the people in my lab to install the program, and then they started trying it. And actually it made a big difference for us. So that's one thing that we have to, you know. And then also that FreeLine, which is another program that from Nico's lab that we also use very often, and also had this implement this likelihood-based algorithm to for 3D classification. So all this thing has been tremendously useful for the influence, I think, for the last 2 years. And this was happened 2 years ago in this workshop. So then the other things that what happened since then, and of course then since then that those fractionation image acquisition and motion correction, this became a routine now. So almost everybody are using a direct detect camera and it does this in one way or another. And after that, also that Shaw's also at the same almost same time as we published this, or we published a bit earlier, that we for our way of doing the whole frame motion correction, Shaw's also published his algorithm of still tracking the individual particle that for the ribosome particle and show that motion correction and on the individual particle level can also improve the resolution significantly. And he got a very high resolution structure of ribosome particles from an incredibly small number of particles. So that was the one thing that a number of things that happened since then. That so this whole thing became a routine now. And then, of course, then the, as Varna mentioned, that the direct detect camera is now is being used to produce a number of near atomic resolution structures since 2 years ago. And as Varna mentioned, that it is sort of triggered a kind of resolution revolution. As Varna mentioned, that this is a figure taken out from this review article by Varna. And of course, he mentioned this about this ribosome structure, and then also our trip channel structure, and then also this hydrogenase structure. They're all at a 3-sum Angstrom resolution, clearly visible, visualized in the side chain, and then one can build a de novo atomic model. So that's kind of like a really exciting thing. So then I will go into a bit more detail about what happened, and then also specifically focus on the membrane protein part, because that's the part that most of my lab right now is working on the membrane protein, so that I want to focus on that part a little bit more. So using EM to study membrane protein is nothing new. It's been there for years. But then it's still very challenging, and because membrane protein is particularly challenging for X-ray crystallographer, it's difficult to get a crystal, and therefore, for a long time, that has also been a target for EM. And the most well-established technique to study membrane proteins has been electron crystallography of 2D crystal. And I myself has been involved in the work working on light bacterial autopsin, and when I was in Yoshi's lab, and later on also participated in the work in aquaporin, and when I was in Tom Watt's lab. So this was and then two other structures like alpha beta gamma tuberin, and then also the light Hopkins complex. Those are really a successful example of showing the 2D crystal, the power of 2D crystal. So this approach is more or less quite well established, and also still in the development. And but most time it will produce very good structure and at various resolution. And if you follow really doing things right, the chance of getting things wrong is small. But of course, if you don't follow the things right, then you still have a chance of getting things wrong. And but here, the resolution is most limited by the quality of the crystal, but not by the technique itself. So that's one thing that is very different. Now, the other way of studying the membrane protein, of course, is using single particle EM. But for that one, it's been a long way. So it's a long journey, I would say, that was full of hope and excitement. So Tom actually gave a very long, a very extensive introduction of this part in his talk in 2 years ago. So I'm not going to repeat that, because if you're interested, you can look at his talk 2 years ago, covered a lot of ground of the membrane protein, and particularly on the using EM to study membrane protein. And this slide part of it is also taken from Tom's talk 2 years ago, that this is showing the early time when people used the single particle EM to study membrane protein. These are two structures of this ranitidine receptor and at a certain angstrom resolution. And so along the way, there was always hope that we can get the membrane protein structure without forming crystals. So there's always a hope, and then there's also excitement there. But it also have a lot of embarrassment and the struggles along the way, particularly when we see this structure of this IP3 receptor of the same protein from four different groups that are all showing different structure. The only common feature of those things is it's the fourfold symmetry. So that's also the things that made people wonder whether membrane protein using single particle EM to study membrane protein is a good approach or not. But the fortunate thing is that this kind of struggle did not stop the field. And then you can see that from Wall and Steve Lutger lab, then they really want to clear out the way and then develop the methods and to validate the structure of single particle EM and make the things move much faster, much better now. So that with all this validation tool now, and I think part of the motivation was really to validate the structure to avoid things like this. And then like the tilt pair now became a routine now to validate the structure, at particularly at the intermediate resolution level. And then those also enable the field to continue to move forward. And of course, then the next thing was that was John Rubinstein's work in 2011 that with ADP synthesis. And then this was, I think it was probably the first time that people started seeing the transmembrane helices of a membrane protein without using a crystal and then by single particle EM. And I remember I was very excited when I saw this paper back then. I thought that it's possible really to do things with much smaller. Of course, then it took us a few years until we used all the new technique to get to the trip channel structure where that is the resolution was improved to a near atomic resolution. So and that was after we had this all the new technology and then developed and then using it. So trip channel was the one that we get to the atomic resolution. It was published about almost a year ago. And then since then, there's also a lot of progress in the membrane protein of by single particle EM. For example, this the gamma secretase was another one that which is a very impressive and quite important one from Shaw's and the Yikong Shi lab from in China. And then I think Xiao Chen is going to talk about this one in the next in a few days. Now the other thing, of course, was also very exciting is that the mammalian respiratory complex one. This is a huge complex, large thing, and then to a 5 angstrom resolution. So that's the kind of thing was so obvious that it was not possible by a crystallography approach, and then it went to this high resolution. And then, so this is also another example of showing that the power of single particle EM now is really, really pushing forward. And of course, the recent one, that this is unpublished, I got this map from Ningyan, from Tsinghua University, and there will be 3 structures on the RYR receptor, and all moved to resolution from 10-ish angstrom resolution to sub-nanometer resolution, and then this one to, I think the resolution is about close to 3.8 angstrom. And then we can start seeing the side chains in the transmembrane domain, so all this aligning of one can start building the de novo model of this huge complex. Now this is still unpublished, but I hope that it will be published. I heard it will be published soon. Now these are the things that went to really high resolution, and that was very exciting. But there are also a number of other things that went to also not very high resolution, but also gave providing very good information for the structure. For example, this is the glutamate receptor from Sri Lanka's Balamanian lab, and around like a 7-8 sub-nanometer resolution. And then back, say, 2 years ago, this would be tremendous improvement. So also our own work on the ABC exporter is a bacterial ABC export, which was Champagne was the one did the work. And this was also just published a few days ago at the sub-nanometer resolution. At this resolution, we're still not able to see the side chain, but then we can resolve all the secondary structure very clearly, and then it gave us a tool to actually try to understand the different functional states of the membrane protein. So basically, the message here is that if one can trap the membrane protein in a specific functional state, then it is possible to get the structure without forming the crystal. And I think that's quite clear now. This is the case. So. So these are kind of things that not all of them, but a major things happened, particularly in the membrane protein field, and since about a year two ago. And so then I want to try to also address some of the questions that Bridget listed there for me to answer. And I'm not able to address all of them, but I just try to follow the things that particularly what we learned during the work on the trip channel and then what might be useful for other people, and how this could be helpful. So for the trip channel, once we populate the structure, and there are often people asking us, you know, what really you think, what is the major one factor that made the whole scene possible? And then it's not really, it's hard to say which one scene made it, everything with the whole scene possible, but there's a lot of details there and made it possible. But then if we really want to summarize it, and then I would think that one can summarize it as a four different points that made us able to work on the trip channel to get a high resolution. Now, one particular thing is that the available and of a high quality in a biochemically stable protein. So that's very stable, very critical, one thing. And then the other thing is that it has a large number of very well characterized pharmacological reagents so that we can manipulate in the protein. So this is also something very important for the EM, for this whole work. So of course, then the camera-related new technology, the high DQE and the dose fractionation, movie motion correction, all this thing is critical. But then the other thing is the classification of a heterogeneous particle. So these are a number of things that made trip channel, this work was really possible. And what actually made us to be able to look at a much smaller protein of ABC transporter, so I just add this one here, that is that one thing particularly is that we used a approach using FAB to stabilize the protein, to enlarge its size so that it can be better done by EM, and then also to trap a specific conformation. And then also one can use it to break the pseudo symmetry. Because in this particular case, the ABC transporter is a heterodimer, has a pseudo twofold symmetry. And without using FAB to break the pseudo symmetry, it would be very hard to get high resolution. So I will try to, in the next rest of the time, I will try to go through this sort of thing, that I go into more detail, and then to show you what we did and then what kind of lesson we can learn from there. So for the trip channel, and it started with a expression and the characterization of a very well-behaved protein. Now this has been trip channel, so we started working on it from 2010, and until we got the structure done, it's probably spent 3 years working on it. But for David Julius' lab, it's been started much earlier. And Hukao, I think he joined David Julius' lab in 2007 and has started working on this protein. And then there he spent several years trying to optimize the protein expression, purification, and then all this sourcing. And of course, back then, his goal was to crystallize in this protein. And after 3 years' efforts, he was able to get a good, very nice construct in which this is the RUT chip V1. And he removed the last C and N terminal and also removed a little bit of this loop here in this region. So then he can get a very stable, very well expressed protein. And then he also made sure that this protein is still fully functional even with this this modification. Now this using the Catherine image, they were able to show that protein once expressed is very fully functional and it can be expressed in the hex cell in the mammalian system that it with a higher abundance and then it can be purified in the good quality. And after that, then the one thing they also did was they make sure that the protein you purified, no matter how good they are still functional. So then the things they do is that they can reconstitute the protein back into the lipid vesicles, and then they can do patch clamp and to measure conductivity, measure the character of the protein to make sure that the protein is fully functional and it also responds to all kinds of pharmacological reagent in the way that it's supposed to be. So this comes with covers the 2 points, I think, here. One is that the protein really need to be very well characterized. And then the second is that you also have a tool to manipulate in your protein so that you can make sure that it's behave as it's supposed to be. And then like showing here. And so for the well characterized the protein that basically that it's in a way it's similar as a crystallography, but that you have to have a mono, really nice monodispersed geofiltration peak. And then, but we also want to make sure that the protein looks not only in the geofiltration looks nice, but also the looks nice actually in the next stand. And it shows that not only size-wise homogeneous in size, but also conformationally homogeneous. Now, from here, then that's the next step is that we went to the cryo. And then for the, in this case that we started with using the old camera, old technology, that you can see that we can get the nice images. And also the Tonglin, also using the old camera, is not very high, but to 8 angstrom resolution. But then from there, we actually stuck there for quite a while. And we never get in something which makes sense, the reconstruction. The reconstruction always looks like a solid ball, and very hollow, empty in the bottom, in the transmembrane domain. And which is, then later on, now we look back, at the structure often looks something like this way. That it kind of gives you a shape of a trip channel, like singing. So, but you can see that this is supposed to be the transmembrane domain, is completely empty, hollow. And then this was stuck us for quite a while, until we used the Relion to do the 3D classification. Then it turned out that using this one, the whole data set, and only about 20% of particle out of this group can be actually, we can refine this one to higher resolution. So all the rest of them, they never give you any sensible reconstruction which you can interpret in. So this is the one thing that I would say that because really, if we don't use able to classify them, we will probably stuck there even for a longer time. Even we have a better camera and all this, it may still not help you that much. And so even with the old camera technology, that after classification, we were able to get to this structure of this protein to around like 8 angstrom resolution. So that was an assurance that, for example, you started seeing the transmembrane helices and all these things that showed us that we actually can get to this kind of protein to a high resolution. And of course, the new camera made things tremendously exciting and different. So this is the image of the trip V1 embedded in the thin layer of ice. This is a Fourier transform of the motion correction that you can see that the tonguing goes all the way to here. And then this one has used a bit of higher defocus than we used to use for the 20th polarization, simply because the particle is much smaller. And then the difference you can see is tremendous when we compare with the particle from a K2, from a direct detection camera, compared with the one with the old camera. That this is the one where we get 8 angstrom structure. And then this is the one that now we get into a higher resolution. You can see that the detail, the level of detail is tremendously different, and then more details. So when we get this one, you start to feel like you're going to get something out of this, something really good out of it. Of course, here, the other way that we use the motion correction, or every micrograph, we're getting to this kind of resolution. And the whole image process was streamlined, that you can get around like a reconstruction turnover is like in a week or two, that you can get a structure from the time you get a data. So all this thing made it happen, putting together, that eventually we're able to get a structure to a 3.4 angstrom resolution, and then able to build a de novo model. So these are the number of things we try to emphasize, is that you really need a good protein. Of course, we also need a good technology, like a new camera and then all these things. And then, of course, 3D classification is another thing which is very important. Without all these things, that we were never able to get to this level. But then with all these things, we can get a structure. But then the other question for the membrane protein was particularly critical, is that how do you interpret this structure? Even you get a nice structure at the atomic level, how do you know what's the condition, what's the conformation, what state of this structure what you got? So that's come with another thing, that if you have a lot of pharmacological tools to manipulate in the channel, manipulate the protein, then give you tools to dissect what conformation they are to really make a story out of it. So in this particular case, in the trip V1, we're lucky that we have a whole bunch of tools, and including, like in this case, a double knot toxin. This was also identified in David Julius' lab, and which binds the protein in a very nice way, and then activating the protein. So all these are very well characterized. And also with a capsaicin and all this bunch of reagent, one can manipulate it, and then you make sure you know that the protein is in exactly what conformation. And then that from all these things that we were able to then get into three different conformation and showing the double knot toxin where it binds, and then the capsaicin-like molecule where it binds, and eventually give you three different conformation of the protein, that by combining them, then we can make a nice story out of it that it shows that how the protein functions and generating some mechanistic insight. So that's kind of a thing that related to the chip channel. We think every single thing was important. And without this last part, that pharmacologically very reagent, that also we may be able to get a high resolution, but it became actually difficult to interpret them. So that's one of the things. I think if you look at the new the paper of glutamate receptor, it was also the case, because there they used many different things to trap the protein in different conformation, and they try to understand the mechanistic, address the mechanistic questions. So that's the kind of thing that we learn from there. But then putting all the things together, so now this is to see that how we can handle, I mean, membrane proteins particularly challenges, kind of difficult one. So from there, can we generalize something more general, sort of to see what's the major problem there. So if we look at the whole flowchart of a typical flowchart of looking at a membrane protein, that is kind of divided into a number of steps. The first one is you really need a protein, good protein, from the expression, purification, and optimizing all the biochemical conditions. You need this one. This one is probably also still very time consuming. Then you need to do the single particle EM and with a getting the structure from data acquisition, imaging process, getting final reconstruction. And then the very the likelihood is that you have to go back and forth many times back in here to improve getting a good reconstruction. And the good thing is that now this step seems to be the least time-consuming part now. And at least each cycle. So good thing about the single particle EM is you're always getting something out of it. You're always getting a structure. Whether this structure is what you want or not, that's a different story. But you're always able to get one. So you may be able to go back and forth many times. Then the next thing is that you, of course, from here, you want to build a model. And the last thing that you want to write a paper. And then the paper there is also a bit tricky, that what you write and what you publish it, when you publish it. And then what you want to publish is structure, or you want to publish a story. So that's kind of the things that are a typical cycle. And then let's go into the detail about a bit more to look into the each one of them. So for the protein production, so now because my lab is also not only now, we're not only just doing the EM, but we also have our own, making our own proteins and then and to work on a number of our own projects. So we can get more and more into this part and then getting a better understanding of what's going on there. So for recombinant protein, one thing that is that you really need to optimize the protein expression and purification like everybody does. The crystallographer used to do this all the time. And then, for example, in the using this fluorescent-based size-accretion chromatography to find out which construct is the best, can be best expressed. And then you need to, and then for the endogenous protein, you really need to also optimize your protein purification protocol. And then from a private communication with Lin Yan's lab in Tsinghua University in China, that she mentioned to me that one of the critical things for them to working on this reality receptor was that they used there's a protein which binds, they knew that it binds to the reality receptor very tightly. And then they were able to make a recombinant protein of that small one, and then with an affinity tag. So they're using that one to bind to the endogenous reality receptor, and they're using it for pull down to greatly shorten the purification procedure so that they can preserve the protein better. Whether that is the main things that make the whole thing much better or not, that I'm not so sure. I don't know, but at least there's something there that made really big efforts to try to improve the protein production, and then from there. And then after that, then it's optimization. That of course, we need to try all kinds of detergent. We're now trying also different amphipoles. And then there's not only one type of amphipole. There are many different types. We'll try all of them to see what's which one works better. And then the bottom line, I think, is that you really need a good size occlusion chromatography profile, which is absolutely required. If you don't have this one, it's not good enough. But this is not insufficient. And then so that we also check every prep by negative stain EM. Now this is this is actually quite critical. And then from our own experience, we realized that we're cooperating with different people, particularly with crystallographer lab, another lab. You've sometimes found that the collaboration with the crystallographer lab is actually harder than with a lab which don't have enough experience on the protein expression. Because for the crystallographer, a lot of them are very proud of them, the protein. When they give you protein, they think this is the best ever. There's nothing else one can do. It's just the best. And when you put in the EM grease, and they look like crap, then you tell them, so the protein doesn't look good. Then they always tell Sync that, well, something's wrong with your EM. Right? Your buffer, your pH, something's wrong there. So they refuse to change anything. For this type of thing that you know that it's not going to go anywhere. But there are also people which are very open to the things. They think they are the best biochemists. When they see their protein, when they see your picture, they think, okay, there's something else I need to try. I need to change it. So then you know that you're in a more sort of like a positive feedback loop that you can improve the things. This is a kind of like a personal experience, you know, sort of. Yeah. So, for example, this is exactly what we showed. This is the trip channel. And then when we start working on this one with David Julius lab, as I mentioned, who already spent 3 years purifying and optimizing this protein, setting up the trays for years and they try to crystallize in it. So he got this kind of geofiltration peak, which is very nice. And then when we first look at the protein in the next 10 EM, they look actually quite nice. They're monodispersed in the term of size, they're very homogeneous. But when you look at the classification, some of them, for example, like this guy, this one, really look like a trip channel. But there are also things that which looks a bit strange, looks a bit sort of not nice kind of thing. I cannot really say how to, but out of this thing, we actually never get able to get a sensible reconstruction out of it. And so you have to going back. So the things that is that every time you show him things like this, he always says, well, let me try something else. He never tells you, that's it, this is the best thing we ever did, right, can ever do. So there's always, you can think that there's always something we can improve. And then finally, one thing made a difference is that when we saw von Kuppmann's paper of using amphipole to mostly for helping them to make it a single eyes, that we started using amphipole. But we also realized that amphipole not only make it easier for you to make a single eyes, but also improve the protein quality. And then later on, we showed this geofiltration peak, which compared with the one that from detergent has very subtle difference. I mean, for my eye, now I can see the difference, but back then I just thought this looks the same to me. But then the protein looks dramatically different. So that shows you that you really need to be open-minded to optimize your protein and going back and forth. Now, this is one thing the other thing we also see very often for the transmembrane, for membrane protein, one thing is that transmembrane domain is oftentimes has a much weaker density than the soluble domain. Now, this is what we have for the trip V1. We had it previously, and which has a completely hollow part of this in the transmembrane domain. Now, this is trip V2. It's a published structure. Here you can see that also the transmembrane domain is completely hollow. Also, the soluble domain has the right shape. And this is not something for one person did not do a good job. But we also see this kind of thing very often in our own sample. And then this is at a low resolution. You're already able to tell this one. And then from this kind of sample, you know right away that there's no way you can get to high resolution structure of the entire thing. But there are things that even at a higher resolution, you can see that, for example, this gamma secretase. Shao-Chen might also tell you more about this one later on. And then the transmembrane domain from the paper, we can see that the transmembrane domain is weaker than the soluble domain. And then the same as this is the glutamate receptor, you can see the transmembrane domain is also weaker. So this is nothing, this is quite a common thing that for membrane protein, the transmembrane domain often became weaker. And how to really resolve this one, I don't have a recipe. But at least we know that if we get it to the 2D cross average level, if we start seeing this kind of feature in the transmembrane domain, we can have a good hope that we are able to get to a better resolution, better structure. But otherwise, it will be harder to get to a good structure. So what's the solution, potential solution? For us, we think that one thing that you have to do is that you go back to biochemistry. Try to screen for different oscillogs. And then because now doing things to this level, is quite fast now. So you're able to combine your EM with the screening and then try to get in a better structure. Also, this is also a kind of like a cost way. But this is probably one of the things that one can try. And then also using other additive sort of like try to see anything that you can think it can stabilize the transmembrane domain. And also, now we also start trying using lipid nanodisc to keep protein the lipid bilayer. And then I'm not so sure this is the one that really will solve the problem. We still have the problem. But of course, the plan B is to sort out the conformation or heterogeneity computationally. So that's a way just try to deal with the existing sample. But then here, there's also that I tend to think about if you have this problem, it's most likely your transmembrane domain has a conformation heterogeneity. If one can sort them out, then there's another question follows that which structure is really the biological relevant one for you to look at it. So that's another thing that one have to think about it. So the important thing is that a better classification algorithm is always better, but this does not substitute that you to getting a better biochemistry. In a way, the biochemistry is always the important thing to do. Now, the imaging data acquisition part, this is the part that everybody's familiar with, that we are nowadays using a direct camera and widely used, and then also the motion correction became kind of standard procedure. And then also automated particle picking, everybody's automatic or semi-automatic particle picking is a routine now that is easily getting a huge number of particles. And then also streamlined data processing now enable a new user, a new person that doesn't need to have a 10 years experience in EM to getting a three-sum angstrom resolution structure if everything's done right. So that's the kind of thing. Ideally, that for us, that for many people probably, that if all the resource is available, means that you have a microscope, you have enough computer, and then from the time you collect the data until the time you get in the reconstruction takes about a week. And of course, in reality, this is hard to, it's very difficult to achieve this one. But most likely, the major bottleneck is in the available, for us at least, is the available of computer resource. We never had enough computer resource to deal with the data we're able to take. And then, but the good thing is that this high efficiency made it possible to test all kinds of different sample conditions so that you don't worry about, okay, I want to try something new, and then you don't worry how long it takes. And you know that in 2 weeks, you can get that one. Now, every good news comes with bad news. The bad news is this whole thing makes you very psychologically stressful. The higher resolution you get, the more stressful you are, because you always constantly worry that any other minute, anybody, somebody else is somewhere else in another side of the world, you know, doing exactly the same thing, and you're going to be scooped. This is always a very, maybe very stressful. So this is a thing, there's no solution for that. So then the next thing, of course, is to build a model. And then turned out now this became a very time-consuming part to do the de novo model building. And then, because for many of us, particularly EM people, without the crystallographic experience, that building this model is completely new. How do that we need to still need to learn and then learn things about it. And this is still very time consuming and very challenging. And then the other thing is that from the experience, at least from my own experience of working on the chip channel, that I thought that we used to worry about if my map is correct or wrong. You always worry about this. But now once we get to this high resolution, we worry that much less. We know that the map must be correct. But then we start to worry about if my atomic structure is correct or not, even if my map is correct. So this is another thing that how to properly validate atomic structure is still something that I think we need to address, and we need to make it much easier and for everybody to use it, to do it. So of course, for checking and the validation is one thing that you want to make sure your structure has good geometry and all this sort of thing. But you also want to, another way we can think is that you also want to be able to validate the structure biochemically. For example, for the case of an ABC transporter, that we use the cross-linking, cysteine cross-linking. The major story there is that we saw this ABC transporter in a specific conformation. It's in the nucleotide-free states that the two nucleotide binding domain interacting with each other. And this was not seen before, or not often seen before. Most time in this nucleotide-free state, that two nucleotide binding domains widely separated. So to really prove that this is the case, that we did a cysteine cross-linking and introduced a two cysteine pair, and then use the cysteine cross-linking to validate this structure. So the question is, the last thing is that really to write the manuscript. So here, the question is that what should we publish? And then it's always when you have a structure, you really want to rush to get a publication. And then the question is really that what is you publish a structure or publish a story? And this is the same question that we constantly ask ourselves. And we also try to, when we read another paper, we want to see whether there is a story there. And then there is no easy answer. I think it's up to everybody to judge by themselves. And then, but the lesson we learned from the TRPV1 is that with the available of all kinds of pharmacological reagents to manipulate your protein, that give you a much better chance that to gain structure in different conformations, make a story rather than just publishing a structure. So these are the things that I have five minutes. Yeah, I'm only at 45 minutes. I can have a, okay, 2 minutes. Yeah. So what are the things that it's a little bit random, other things, but all the things that are kind of like related to what we're thinking about. So the things that we always care about the resolution. What's the limitation of the resolution? And one thing is that we always need to keep in mind that not every sample will go to high resolution. And then the question is why and how to change it, right? So one obvious thing is the heterogeneity. And then we always try to deal with it. And then the other thing is that whether there's other limiting factors. It's not very clear what is really limiting us, but our own experience also showed that there may be something that we need to think about it. One thing I want to share with you is that eye sickness could be a major factor also. And for example, this is the image we took I think this is ribosome sample. This is a ribosome, not on a thin carbon film, but it's just ribosome suspended in the ice without a carbon film. And this was done actually together during the data collection. We have a few visitors, and Bob Grazer was there, and Shui Lan, and then two of his lab members there. And this is an image of the search mode. And then these are two images taken from one of these two holes. I don't remember which one is which. But you can see that the tongue ring in one of this one, this is from thinner ice, goes to 3 angstrom. From the other hole, just next to it, it's only limited to a very low resolution. So the one thing we notice the difference is that there's ice sickness is very different. Now, from this image, Bob's estimation of the ice sickness is around like this one is about 900 angstrom roughly, and the six is this one is around like 300 angstrom. So you can see that by eye, this doesn't really look that huge difference, but the estimated eye sickness is actually almost 3 times higher than this one. So this is, and we see a strong correlation of the visible tongue ring and then the sickness of the eyes. So what's the possible solution, explanation, is that besides the other things we can think about is that the particle at different heights has a different actually CTF. So this is related to what Ken Downing once mentioned to me. He says, we always tend to think about the particle has a two geometrical parameter to restrain its position, define its position x and y, but it actually has a z. That's related to the defocus. And then this is a CTF simulation of if you average the CTF of for example, this is a 300 kV, 2 micron defocus, and with different ice thickness, that for 500 angstrom, you will see that there's a damping of the CTF envelope. And up to 1,000 angstrom, you can see a strong damping here. And then with the thicker ice, you can see this loss of the envelope. But then this is still not enough to explain the severe loss of what we saw in terms of ice. So there must be something else that's also related to that one. So that's one of the things that we are not quite clear why and how to resolve it. We also don't know. And then I personally think that this is one of the reasons that for the ABC transport, that structure we got also using the K2, and then it was only limited to 8 angstrom resolution, was not able to get high resolution. But Shenping, she did the work, she had a different opinion. She saw this simply was the first one we did in the K2 camera. We wasn't experienced enough. And then with the now much better, more experience, we should be able to, even with the same sample, we should be able to get it better. But still, that this was eye sickness, it could be one of the things. So this is what I think I run out of my time. These are all the things I want to talk today with you. And it's a little bit random, But I try to follow the things that are not on a, it's not a cohesive story, but I try to summarize a lot of our findings, our thoughts on the things. And I hope this will be helpful for people in this workshop. And finally, these are the things that are crunched for the people who did the work. Jinping was the one who did the ABC transporter, and Mao Fu was the one who did also the trip channel, and Xueming was the one who did this motion correction. And we work very closely with the Eagle Lab and on the K2 camera, all the technology development. And we also work with the David Julius Lab on the trip channel and on ABC transporter. It was a large collaboration with Charlie Craig Lab, who generates the FAB, and Astral Lab, who make the protein, and the Robert Tempe Lab, and who was the one discovered this protein in the first place. And these are the funding agencies support our work. Finally, thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was a fantastic start. There are time for a couple of questions.
Amédée Desgorges, Joachim's Lab. So you touched a little bit on this. So classification of the trip channel, you had different structures, and one of them got you high resolution. But what tells you that this is the only correct structure? Like, in the other classes, indeed, there might be different conformations, more difficult, like less stable, that go to less, not so high resolution, but that might actually be biologically relevant. And you actually touched on it again when you talked about amphipoles, the fact that without amphipoles, you get many different structures. With amphipoles, you only get one. So, but what about, like, for the readenine receptor, we know amphipoles actually influence the function. Like, readenine receptor does not work very well anymore in amphipoles. So is it possible that the amphipoles are actually blocking the channel? It's not biologically active anymore. And all the different structures that you got from classification before using amphipoles maybe were actually biologically relevant. And actually, how the question also is how to deal with this data. How can we actually get that information?
I think I lost a little bit of what you asked.
What's that other stuff on the grid?
Sorry?
What's that other stuff on the grid that you had to begin with, the 70% that you threw aside?
Yeah, people keep, we don't know. And we don't know. We should try to figure it out, but we never did it because one thing we know is that none of the other classes can actually be refined to high resolution. They're not only able to refine to high resolution, but it looks very strange. It doesn't really look like a channel, doesn't really look like a correct folded protein or anything related to it. So that's from that, I personally think, they are really just damaged protein for whatever reason, how they damage it, I'm not so sure. But they really don't look like a synth. And then in other channels, data set, we do see different conformation. And some can refine to high resolution, some cannot, but at least the protein gave you a hint that it looks like a real right one with some changes in some portion. So there you can understand it. So whether amphipole, so another thing I think I catch the last part of what you mentioned is that whether amphipole blocks the protein function in an artificial way, it's possible. However, the three other structures that we did, two other ones, that with the with the double knot toxin, with the capsaicin, all this was added after we substituted the amphipole. So it's still functional in a way that this protein still binds, still open the channel and modify it. And of course, there's no way we can do the function study on whether measure the channel function using in the presence of amphipole, because there's no way we can reconstitute back to the lipid after amphipole substitution. So that part of we don't really know. So now what we're doing is that we're trying to put this thing into the lipid nanodisc instead of go through the amphipole, just then to look at the structure in the nanodisc. So that's probably ultimately a better way. So I don't know if I addressed all your question, if I catch the right question.
Gabriel Frank?
Yeah.
From Serum's Lab. You discussed a lot the quality assurance that you do with imaging. However, you also alluded a little bit, and I would like some elaboration about how do you do some type of quality assurance on the level of biochemistry. You said that you see differences between a good protein and a bad protein on the gel filtration, and also that these techniques that measure stability. So how do you really use that thing?
So I think for us, the bottom line is that you need to do everything biochemical way, like the crystallographer, a very good crystallographer lab used to do, right? To add, you know, do all the things that make sure the protein function. So everything, we cannot omit any step. But what I will try to say is that that may not be enough. So on top of that, we still want to look at the protein. And then look at protein by EM. There's many different levels of looking at it. You can simply look at the negative stain. It looks sometimes just able to tell you that the protein doesn't look good. And when you work on something for long, you can see that, for example, if you simply do a 2D cross averages, you can see that if they are heterogeneous or if they have very well-defined shape, and then that gives you some hint about how good they are. And then the next level is that you try to do the structure in the cryo. If they all looks good, but then even by then you go into cryo, you may not get a good structure. You may get a structure that which is correct structure, but some portion may have higher resolution than the other, or maybe you don't get a high resolution one way or another. And then by then, it's a mystery that how do you go back to the biochemistry? What can you do? The bottom line, I think, is that I don't know what is there's no recipe for us to say always, if this happened, what do you do next? But the thing now is that we can always try a lot of different things. And then if you try anything new, it takes you probably another 2 weeks, you can get a structure. Then you will know that since you tried early, it's making things better or worse. Then in this way, it enables you to screen for a number of conditions that can help you. So I think the advantage for EM is that we're always able to get something. So that something always gives you some information. So for crystallographer, that when something don't crystallize in it, they are sort of in the dark. They just try different things and until they get a crystal. So that's part of things that I think is,
Hi. I was thinking about the question, what's wrong with those 60%? And I'm going to show a little more in my talk, but I tried to reprocess your trip channel data that you shared with me and also got a map that is essentially the same as what you got. But the class overlapped only to 60% with your class.
Yes.
And so
yes.
Now there's another question, why do I get a very similar structure but with a different set of particles?
Yeah.
And so one possibility is that this classification procedure just isn't, every time you start with a different set of seeds, it ends up in a slightly different place. It's also possible that some of the particles that are not ending up in your good class are misaligned, and I just have a different set of misaligned particles than you had. So I guess there are a bunch of things like this.
Same related to this one, that we also, not only we gave this data set to other people, in our own lab it's the same as a training data set for people new come to the lab, and then they started using this one to process it to get it to whatever resolution, because we know that what we can get. So then one thing we also found is that even for different people, at least we did it once, twice, that two different people processed the same data set to the same resolution, but the particle in the group, final group, they don't overlap. They overlap around like 460, like you said, overlap in certain portion, but the other portion did not overlap. Now the question is that whether we missed out something, or can we actually fish out more good particles or things like that? And the more we did it, I think we start to learn actually a little bit more, and then sometimes we can, for example, in the trip channel case, that we do fish out a small group that anchoring repeats that were in our puppet structure, we're missing two first anchoring repeats. We're fishing out some group that which has a more or less completed first two anchoring repeats. So it's kind of like, like you said, a lot of things we still don't know, but it's the same experience as you had.
I'm Melody. I'm in Bridget's lab. Near the end of your talk, you mentioned the correlation between the number of tone rings visible and the ice thickness. I wanted to ask you how you measured the thickness of the ice.
Oh, this was the image. It was a very crude way. Bob did the measurement. So we took the image. We gave it to Bob. Bob was very smart to figure out how to. So as you can say, in this particular image, we have a hole which are empty, and we have a hole which is a different. Bob just measured the intensity, average intensity of that hole, and then by related to the one that with ice and see how much intensity is what percentage, and then from there Bob derived a number, and Bob did mention to me that that's not precise; it's just very rough estimation. But does give you a kind of ballpark range, kind of a rough idea about it. Actually, even by eye, the ice looks just a little bit thicker, but it could be actually a much thicker than you thought. So by eye, we saw this ice are very homogeneous, but Bob measurement is one could be 300 angstrom. The next one just looks a little bit thicker. It could be 900 angstrom. So, and then this I don't really know is that whether energy field can improve this or not. Because we never tried that.
Yeah. I think we should move on. Thank you very much for an outstanding talk. And thanks for staying on time. That was like to the second almost. It was amazing. And thanks to the questioners for introducing themselves. I forgot to